November 21, 2023. It's a Wild for Pete Rose show. Watch for Pedro okay. Show. Happy Tuesday, I guess. We started the show off with Mr. PC, a live excerpt from Birdland, March 2, 1963. John Coltrane with his classic quartet. Then we had Divine Horseman with Garden and Night. And even with all the hells and perils of using technology, I do have Julie Christensen. Where are you talking to me from, Julie?
We're actually here in Burbank, beautiful downtown Burbank.
Valley. Okay.
In the valley, sorry.
No, that's all right. Come on, I have a lot of fucking perk lives in the Val. I mean, a lot of good people in the Val.
Yeah.
You know what Sly Stone said? Sly Stone said, it's not where you're from, it's where you're at.
Okay. Where you're at.
Because a lot of times people don't get to pick that. Anyway, yeah. I wanted to get into your journey through music. I've known you a long, long time, but I don't know how you got into it. So why don't you please bring your earliest musical recollection?
Let's see. I think we played with the Minutemen.
No, I'm talking about you personally, your earliest musical recollection. Like some people have told me they heard stuff inside their ma.
I probably did because she was a church organist for whatever. Protestant church needed an organist, and but my earliest recollection probably is church, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Probably. I was going to say Carnival, yeah. Carnivals of Souls. You know that movie? There's an organ player in that one. I think that lady only made that one movie, and the guy who made it too. I think he's the creepy dude.
Chris probably showed me that movie.
You know, a lot of rock and rollers come out of the church. You know.
Do they?
Yeah, Elvis Presley. Yeah, and Little Richard. A lot of people, they learn. I think church singing is more unbridled, more let the freak flag fly kind of mode. Sometimes. Yeah. Everybody has different experiences. But I know there's a lot of early rock and roll in the church. So there's no problem. And also reading these books on John Coltrane and a lot of jazz, a lot of people, music generally, there's church stuff. Let me ask you this. Your ma played organ. Was there organ in the house you grew up in?
No, there was a piano. And
Jump on that?
Well, you know what? We used to sit next to each other and play that through that Judy Collins songbook. And it had a bunch of Leonard Cohen stuff in it. And
let me ask you this. So, did you have to go through, a lot of guests have had on the show, they call the piano lessons almost the thing that made them want to quit music forever?
Well, yeah, I did have an excellent piano teacher.
And you know what? I don't think it's experience as much as the teacher. Some people aren't cut out to do that job.
I think she wasn't, man. She was a doctor's daughter, and she was real indignant about having to do it. And I remember my hands shaking around, just like me trying to get on this call. My hands were shaking and, you know, performance anxiety, and it was just, you know. But I remember hearing, you know, my dad used to collect records, so he would let me stay up late to hear Nat King Cole. That Nat King Cole trio, it was Sweet Little Rain on that record. I think it was called After Midnight.
Speaking of records, what was the first record you bought with your own money, Julie?
It was at the Hy-Vee food store. I bought the Beatles' second album.
And what was the first gig you saw?
Oh, man. Let's see. Well, in junior high, we had like a little thing at the Y, and there was a trio of kids we knew, and they played, what's that Cream song? It has a name that isn't connected to what the song really says.
Badge. Yeah, it starts with a bass lick, right? Boom, 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 boom. Yeah, she cried away your life since she fell out the cradle. I think Pete Brown wrote a lot of their words. We lost him last year. They were a band that, used outside lyric writer. Let me ask you this. What about at school? Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
Oh, you damn Skippy. Yeah, I was in the choir. I was the main soloist in high school in the choir. I'd come in after lunch, after smoking pot at Maytag Park. I grew up in Newton where they made Maytags, Newton, Iowa. And so I'd go in, I'd smoke pot at lunch, and I'd go into chorus after lunch. And I was like the president of the chorus, and he would always let me sing solos. But I know he knew I was. I know he knew.
You knew that he knew that you knew that he knew.
I knew. And I'd sit next to Nancy Goss, who had the biggest tits in the class. And we'd sing soprano.
Whoa.
It was.
well, then your first instrument is probably your voice.
Oh, yeah. Well,
so that piano
thing. I played piano when I was a kid. I played piano. And then I played flute.
Oh,
but
you
everybody
did.
Was playing flute, and so I moved to bassoon. Yeah, I tried to, after playing bassoon, I tried to play saxophone for a while. I got a little alto saxophone, but my embouchure was shitty because, you know, you got to put your top lip forward, kind of, you know, buck tooth on a double reed, like a, you know.
Talking about bassoons, you know.
Bassoon, yeah.
Most of the time you see angels working harps. Have you been to Barcelona, you know, the Sagrada Familia thing, Mr. Gaudi's.
Yeah.
He's still working on that. The angels are rocking bassoons, not harps.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
I wouldn't shit you. Yeah. And I'll tell you, Eddie McKay, not a bassoon, but a double reed, Eddie McKay, Out of the Blue, Roxy Music. Yeah.
Wow.
Rocking the fucking.
Well, there was a
oboe. Oboe, right?
No, but, yeah, well, that was oboe, but there was a band called Griffin, Gryphon, that had a lead instrument was the bassoon.
Whoa, because, you know, bassoon is
that
bass.
That was one of the earliest gigs I saw, too. They were opening for Yes.
Because they were a bass clef, the bass clef, like the bone.
Yeah.
So, okay, let me ask you this. Not after school graduating, but in the afternoon, did you get into the garage band, basement band, bedroom band thing?
You know, my freaking brothers, can I say the other word?
You can say cuss as much. It's a Wofford Pedro show. Let the freak flag fly.
My freaking brothers had a band together with a bunch of Newton kids. They stayed together for 9 years. They opened for like, who's that Texas guy? I'm a sinner. I'm a winner. Whatever.
Yeah, Steve Miller.
Steve Miller.
He started out as a bass player for Boss Skaggs.
Wow,
Dallas
I didn't
guy.
Know that.
Yeah.
Boss Skaggs sings jazz now. He's actually a motherfucker at singing jazz.
Really? Well, you know,
Boss Skaggs.
You know, the whole thing about genre, music is music. Why not, you know, get into anything?
Yeah.
You know, this is one thing that the movement taught me, and I got free of all that shit. It took a long time because it was, the genre gulag in my head. So they had a band, but what about you?
Well, that's what I was going to say. My brothers wouldn't let me in. One of my brothers really wanted me to go ahead and sing in the band. But my other brother, the drummer brother, he said, girls can't rock. It was one of those kind of things.
Oh, wow. Did he ever? He never saw Susie Quattro.
No, well, he changed his mind later on, you know. He's in my corner now. But Dave, my brother, who was like he could play anything. He used to be really maddening. You'd be talking on the phone and saying something to him, and he'd be noodling all at the same time. And I go, Dave, what did I just say? And he would say he's the only one of us with a PhD in pharmacology.
Whoa.
But he wanted me to sing. Anyway, they let me sit in one time on, it was some Allman Brothers tune.
Well, I was going to say flute, that Canned Heat song, Take Me Out to the Country. There's flute all over that motherfucker.
I know. The one about the pervert sitting on the, what was that band?
Aqualung.
Yeah, Jeff Otto.
See, I've lost my memory.
See, so they could have fit you in somehow. You know, you could have done a Griffin thing with that bassoon. Well, I want to play some more Divine Horseman, then we're going to get into Chris's early music trip. Riverside,
thanks,
right?
Man.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah, he's Riverside, dude.
Choice.
Thank you. And now this message.
Tap the Supreme Court. Tap the Supreme Court. Tap the Supreme Court. Coward's last resort. Let's pass my reform retort. Cut the Supreme Court. Who asked their stupid lot? legal bodies left to rot. Thunderhanded legal knots. Fucking useless justice twats. Fuck the Supreme Court. Cut the Supreme Court. Cut the Supreme Court. The coward's last resort. Let's pass my reform retort. Cut the Supreme Court. Who asked their stupid lot? Legal bodies left to rot. Thunderhanded legal knots. Fucking useless justice twats. Stupid over supreme land. Bombing right-wing Jesus plans. Make it safe for us again. Eliminate the right-wing hands. They threaten those we love the most. It's time for an elephant roast. We lean right your ass's toast. Wipe the scourge from coast to coast. Cut the Supreme Court. Cut the Supreme Court. Cut the Supreme Court. Cut the Supreme Court.
We're swimming in honey, we're floating away. We're swimming in honey, just you and me. And how does it feel when the sun goes down? And how does it feel when we float away above? We're swimming in honey, we're floating away. We're swimming in honey, just you and me. And how does it feel when the sun goes down? And how does it feel when we float away above? Floating away, we're swimming in honey, just you and me. And how does it feel when the sun goes down? And how does it feel when we float away above? We're pulling, pulling into sweet, sweet.
Some action now.
Hot for Pedro show. That chunk of music started off with Divine Horseman doing No Mercy. 100 Flowers after that, Long Arm of the Social Sciences. Part 7 of 10 from Position Normal's new album, Whistle Conversion. Post-Homo Hubris Jazz, Side 3 excerpt. Many Mutations with Fuck the Supreme Court, Guided by Voices, Song and Dance. Kit Grill with Swimming in Honey. And finally, Divine Horseman with These Evils. Okay, Chris D., you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Please hey, bring... Mike. Yeah, it's beautiful to get to talk to you and really discuss this Divine Horseman reincarnation, revitalization. So, yeah. But I want to go back way before, you know, even before Flesh Eaters.
Of course.
Please bring, like Riverside Days, bring back your earliest musical recollection.
Well, you know, like Julie, I had to take piano lessons when I was 6 or 7. And I went to a Catholic elementary school. And my piano teacher, after some days at school, was a Japanese-American nun who had a piano in the convent next to the school, and I would go there intermittently and take lessons. And it didn't last too long because I was so terrible at keeping a rhythm and learning the scales. And she was extremely terrifying. you know, there's the cliche, stereotypical idea about Japanese people's personality. She was just a terror, though. I mean, she would lose her temper with me at the slightest instance. And I, you know, admittedly, I didn't know what the hell I was doing, but I was 6. And my parents even got a piano, and we had a piano at the house. And I screwed around with it, like, periodically in grammar school and then in high school, but I never knew what I was doing. I never knew chords, really. I tried to learn, but I could never retain it. But I would sometimes get on the piano and just play and come up with different musical melodies. And, of course, that was before even cassette recorders, so I never recorded anything. I was... You know, that was...
Lost to the Vortex. What was the first record you bought with your own money, Chris?
Probably...
Well, ask that question, because when you're a kid, you ain't got a lot of money, so I'm curious on what would you spend.
You're just loaded with money. Well, you know, I was a huge Rolling Stones fan, but I didn't get any... You know, I really wanted... Rolling Stones did their first American concert at Swing Auditorium in San Bernardino.
I remember gigs out in San... That's the first time I went to San Bernardino, was to see gigs at Swing Auditorium.
Right, yeah. And, of course, I was like... I don't know what I was... How old I was. It was 1964, so I wasn't even in... probably in sixth grade or something like that, seventh grade. You know, I was too young to go. And my mom and dad wouldn't let me go to see shows until I was 17 by myself. And, of course, they were never going to go with me. So it was a non-starter at the Swing Auditorium. But the first record I bought... I didn't buy any Rolling Stone stuff, but I did buy, I remember there was one year that we were living in Maryland because my dad was a professor and he had a sabbatical where he went to work for 1 year in Maryland, and we lived for a year in Maryland. And I remember that year the Beach Boys song Help Me Rhonda came out.
Oh, yeah.
And I bought the 45 of Help Me Run. I remember that.
Now, did you buy it at a drugstore? Because I don't think people realize in the old days you bought 45s at drugstores.
I don't know. There was a big market that was kind of an all-purpose. It wasn't really a grocery store, but it was called Zayers, and it was somewhere between Beltsville, and Beltsville, Maryland was really close to Washington, D.C., and Silver Springs, and Zayers was one of those early shopping center experiences.
Maybe Zayers, a department kind of store. Like,
Zayers was kind of like the Kmart of its day.
In the
mid-60s. And it was probably at Zayers, but I don't remember buying too many 45s until I was back in Riverside when I was in 8th grade. And I remember I bought some of Cream's first singles.
I think the first one was I Feel Free.
I Feel Free. I don't think I bought I Feel Free, but I started buying singles when Disraeli Gears came out.
Ah, that's a great album.
Sunshine of Your Love, and it had the B-side was that weird song, Swabbler.
Yeah, but the rainbow has a mustache. Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, in fact, the guy Peter Brown who wrote
Peter Brown. I was just talking to Julie about that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I have definite Pete Brown damage.
But he was a trip, right? Because a lot of, you know, there was something about rock and roll. You know, they used to sell rock and roll kind of like a folk thing, like the guy who sings a song wrote it. So you didn't have this idea of the outside lyricist. Only Cream did that. And I think maybe ELP did it with Pete Sinfield, maybe PFM and some of that prog stuff.
Yeah, I was actually conscious of Pete Brown writing the lyrics because I remember I loved the lyrics so much. And I actually was looking and I said, oh, this some guy is not even in a band. And White Room was the
with black
one
curtains.
That really got me. White Room still stands up to me. For me, I love that song. So,
I will wait in this place.
Yeah, that song still devastates me. But you know, my parents, they got a one of those console stereos, and it was all inclusive. It had a FM radio. It had a turntable with a multiple, you know, changer where you could stack records, and it also had a reel-to-reel tape. Recorder.
Wow.
And I had reel-to-reel. I had the first four or five Rolling Stones albums on reel-to-reel tape.
Wow.
You know, where I bootlegged them. Basically, I borrowed them either from friends or something, and I recorded them on this because you could record records from your turntable in the console to the reel-to-reel tape, and I did that with, you know. I had several Rolling Stones reel-to-reel tapes that were each couple hours long. So,
wow.
I was really into them. I was really into Steppenwolf. I was really into The Doors.
Let me ask you what I asked Julie. After school, not graduate, but in the afternoon, did you get into the basement band, bedroom band, garage band thing?
I had a band in, I think it was a senior in high school. I had a band for maybe two or three weeks. And the guys in the band, I was a singer. And I remember I wrote one song with them. It's called One-Eyed Woman. And
Polyphemus.
And I was already doing the kind of screaming vocals. I was, you know, John Kay from Steppenwolf, and I was already, I think I'd already heard, I might have already heard Safest Milk by Captain Beefheart, and also this first Stooges album that came out, and I loved that, and I was conscious of the MC5, like, Kick Out the Jams was also actually on AM radio in San Bernardino.
Whoa.
And
did this band do any gigs?
No.
It was just a practice band.
It was gonna be we got together to do a battle of the bands, which I don't know if you remember those.
Oh, yeah, I do. But, look, we're out of time. We're going to have to continue on. We're at the end of the first hour. November 21, 2023. Special guest, Chris D., Julie Christensen. Hold tight for hour two. November 21, 2023. Second hour. Watch for Pedro Show.
African head charge, and a man called King Ayasoba, African lion.
Pedro Show start off second hour. Divine Horseman on the Wane. Off air, people, I was enlightened to the fact that this is the pop song. Exploratum with the Postamon Field, I think. Something from Independent Project, Bruce Liker label. African Heart Head Charge after that. They ain't played for a while. This is new. Never Regret a Day. Marnie Stern, she's back. One in the Same. Jess Joy, her too. Little C. Finally, Divine Horseman. Footprints. On the Moon. Okay, pick up where we were off there, Chris. You were going to do a battle of the bands, but the band never made it to the battle?
No, we didn't. And you know, those battle of the bands, they would generally have 10 or 20 bands, and everybody would only do one or two songs.
Right.
And then they would, you know, I don't remember how they judged it, if it was audience applause meter or if it was some judges up there. I guess it varied. I never actually even went to one. I just knew about them, and we all wanted to do it. But the general consensus was people got sick of my singing. So.
Okay, let me tell you about the first time I saw you. Let me tell you the first time I saw you sing. You were Flesh Eaters opening up for Holly and the Italians. And I was blown away by your singing, but I dug it.
Yeah.
Do you remember this gig? Maybe it was at the Whiskey. Maybe it was at the Roxy. I don't know where, but it was in Hollywood. And you were opening for Holly and the Italians.
Holly and the Italians, I remember, but I don't remember ever opening for them. That's wild.
Yeah, it was a weird kind of thing. We call these kind of gigs character builders. There wasn't a lot of folks.
Yeah. Well, I remember.
I have a character the size of this country.
I like that Holly song, Tell That Girl to Shut Up.
They played that. I remember they were a trio, and you cats opened up. And it wasn't the people on the album. You know, the Flesh Eater record, you had guys from X and stuff like this. They weren't in this band. When I saw the guys I saw on the record, that's when you opened up for Blurt and Fall.
Right. That was the lineup from the second album, Minute to Pray, Second to Die. That was the so-called, if I'm going to use the jargon of the mainstream, the superstar lineup.
That's a good record, man. But the other one's good, too. But there's something about the second one where it's more like kind of a band, I'd say. But the first one's got a bunch of bitchin' songs. And I like everybody's performances. It seems like a lot of people from the mass scene.
Yeah, well, the first one was real piecemeal, and it was recorded, some of it on four-track. Some of it, Randy Stadola from the Alley Cats, he did the four-track stuff.
And, no, he lives in Pedro these days.
Yeah.
And he got the Alley Cats back together.
He's always been down in that neighborhood.
Well, originally from Lomita. Well, actually,
Lomita's where we recorded the four-track
stuff. Yeah, that's where he had that band, the Hubcaps. But he told me, actually, he's from South Dakota.
Oh, I didn't
and then,
know that.
Then Palos Verdes, then Lomita. Yeah, I didn't know. Uh-huh. You know, Tangled Web We Weave, right? But anyway, okay, it's kind of piecemeal in that, and it seemed like that was one big session for the second one. But what was the gap between that high school battle of the band that never happened and the Flesh Eaters? What happened in that gap?
Well, you know, I went to college, to film school. Starting in fall of 1970, I started college a little early, 17 years old, because I had started first grade 6 months ahead of most people, and it had carried over until, you know, each year where I was starting earlier than some of my classmates. So when I was in college between 1970 and 74, I ended up getting a master's too, so I didn't really get out of the college system until right in 77. I had gotten a MA in film and screenwriting, but so I'd gone to film school at Loyola Marymount, and I had really kind of decided that's what I wanted to do the most. So music was on the back burner, but I did do a talent show at college where me and
you're talking LMU. Were you hip to KXLU, the radio station?
Yeah, I was. But, you know, when I was there, KXLU only played rock music on their AM station, which was exclusively relegated to the campus. They had it somehow
on the wire end.
It was a wire broadcaster. It was available in all the dorms,
right?
And there were about five or six.
Okay, they didn't have that freeform FM radio thing because
they only had classical music on until early 77. In fact, it was a year after I left.
Ah, too bad.
Where they went to rock.
Because they had a great, and they still do have a righteous station there.
Yeah.
So you start off.
I was actually a DJ at KXLU when it was AM.
Okay.
But that was like in the AM days between, I don't know, it's probably between, I wasn't a DJ right away there, but it was like 72, 73, that era.
Yeah.
And, you know, stuff that they didn't have. They used to put out promo records in the hallway outside of the station for people to go through and take. if they wanted, because they weren't going to play on the radio. I got I got Mata Hoople's Brain Capers that way. I got MC5's.
Mata Hoople's the band I saw at the Swing Auditorium.
Okay.
By the way.
I never saw him there, but I saw him several other places. But, yeah.
So tell me, what was the first Flesh Eater gig?
First Flesh Eater gig was at The Mask on December 23rd, 1977. And it was Tito LaRiva.
Plugs?
Who already had the plugs simultaneously. He was on guitar. John Ritchie was on bass, and Joe Ramirez from The Eyes was on drums.
Yeah.
Joe, you know.
Sure.
Joe,
I saw John Bonebreak was a drummer when I saw Eyes, Joe, and Charlotte was on bass.
Right, right, yeah, and X kind of...
took him.
I don't want to say stole DJ from The Eyes, but that's how I knew DJ, because the first time, actually, a lineup even before the Tito lineup... The first lineup I had, there was a guitar player from my college that I did the very first rehearsal with, and somebody knew DJ. That was before he was being called DJ. It was Don Bonebreak. We went out to their
Valley
Don's
guy,
house.
Right? He's the only real Los Angeles dude.
We went out to Don's family's house. You know, his parents were already had passed away a couple years before. And he and his siblings were all living together, and they were old enough to take care of themselves that, you know, they'd been living together since their late teenage years without their parents because their parents had died in a car accident or something. But we rehearsed the very first rehearsal. That was the only rehearsal of that lineup. The guitar player didn't work out. He was kind of a crazy dude from my college, from LMU, and but that's how I met Don for the first time. That was before I knew about The Eyes. I was just starting to go to The Mask. I hadn't seen The Eyes yet. But somebody else in the band, and maybe it was John, because I think John Ritchie was already playing with us, and he might have known Don, or maybe it was Joe. Well, maybe it might have been Joe Ramirez. I don't know.
You know what? This next song I want to play is really good because it's called Memory Fails.
Memory fails, won't get no rest. feel so tremble.
Yeah.
Watch for Pedro show at Chunk of Music. Start off with Divine Horseman. Last song Chris wrote for the album. I was enlightened with Memory Fails. Advent after that, False River. Ridge Blower with the Wreckage of Your Presence. Finally, Divine Horseman, Talking in Your Sleep Again. So, how did the Divine Horseman come together?
Divine Horseman came together because I had that lineup. I had a lineup of the Flesh Eaters that actually was the most, one of the most consistent lineups. It actually lasted a couple of years from 82 through 83. And that was the lineup I had after the lineup I had with John Doe and Dave Alvin, and DJ and Steve Berlin and Bill Bateman. That was just a one record thing. That was the second Flesh Eaters album. The third and fourth album, Forever Came Today and Hard Road to Follow, were with this other band. It was Don Kirk on guitar, Robin Jameson on bass, who I have had a long, long musical association with until he passed away a few years ago, and then Chris Wall on drums.
Now Chris and Robin, they go on to the Divine Horseman, right?
Not Chris. Robin was the only carryover from that lineup to Divine Horseman. And but I stopped doing that lineup of the Flesh Eaters in late 1983 because I was so burnt out. We were playing super loud all the time and nobody would turn down. And all the dynamics in the songs I felt were getting lost. And I was also getting more into I was listening to a lot of old school country from the 50s and 60s.
Well, was the drummer Rex?
It was Rex Roberts.
That's right. 50s.
Yeah. Yeah.
My memory fails. Okay. It was Rex, not Chris. I'm so sorry.
But,
okay.
And actually, you know, there was an intermediary record that was on Enigma called Time Stand Still. It was like a solo album. It was called Christie / Divine Horse Man. And I had met Julie at a session where I was producing a song for Top Jimmy, a country song. It was a cover of Hella Walls, which I think Willie Nelson wrote it, but he was basing it off the Fair and Young version, and Top Jimmy just did a killer version, and Julie was amazing on background vocals, and that was the first time I saw Julie, first time I heard her, was at Control Center Studio, which you may or may not remember, was on Western, and that was in like 84 sometime, and
late 83.
It might have even been late 83, yeah.
Memory fails.
So we didn't start recording the Divine Horseman stuff with the Time Stand Still solo, semi. I hadn't really decided to make Divine Horseman a band yet. So I had tons of, you know, Dave Alvin played lead guitar on a couple songs. John Doe played acoustic guitar on a couple songs. Jeffrey Lee Pierce played lead guitar on one song and piano on another. And
didn't Bill Bateman play guitar?
Bill Bateman played rhythm acoustic guitar on three or four songs.
He plays such good drums on that second record. So you seeing Julie sing for Top Jimmy made you want her to be in the band?
Yeah, after I saw her, I started formulating the idea of doing the music live at some point, and I asked her to do the solo record with me, and I ended up having her do duets with me on a couple of the songs, and then she sang back up on some of the others. There was a song I did a duet with Texacala Jones, you know, for Tex and the Horseheads, which Julie did that song when we started doing the band live. You know, once Julie joined the band, Julie and I started a relationship at that point too. And once we started the band, it was kind of full bore and Julie became more the co-lead singer. And was called kind of even Steven with the vocals.
Do you remember the first Divine Horseman gig?
Was it Al's Bar?
It might have been Al's Bar. I think it might have been Al's Bar.
Oh, Anti-Club.
Or the Anti-Club.
Yeah, it was Yeah, everybody said that I
Helen.
Was, you know, that I was the most active singer that ever sang with Chris. You know, Jill Jordan and people like that kind of stood there. But I was just trying to get out of Chris's way.
And Robin was on bass. was Rex on drums yet?
Rex was on drums. Well, yeah, Rex was on drums by that point.
And who was the guitar man?
Guitars were, you know, Kerry McBride from the Juju Hounds did guitar for a couple gigs. There was another guitar player, too. Who was it? It was,
oh, he lives in Portland now.
I don't remember.
I think the guy I'm thinking of ran that hurdy-gurdy rehearsal studio or something.
Oh, Holly Gully.
Holly Gully. That's
that was Robin James.
Oh, that was Robin.
Holly wasn't with us yet. It was.
But Robin played bass. Yeah. Robin was.
Robin was on bass. I remember that.
Yes.
Great guy. I love that guy.
Yeah, and he played bass on all the 1980s Divine Horseman stuff that came out through SST.
But you ended up with a guitar player that kind of looked like Robin a little bit.
Well, there was Marshall was only on the band. Marshall never recorded any studio stuff.
But who was on that first gig?
No, he wasn't. Marshall.
No, who was on the first
gig? I don't remember besides Kerry McBride. She was a guitar player, and then there was another one. God, whoever.
Well, the guy I remember, he kind of looked like Robin, a little taller.
Well, and, you know, for the first Divine Horse record was Devil's River, which we recorded. Well, oh, I know. The intermediary guy, there was Matt Lee, who was from the DIs, and he was our guitar player in 1985, and we actually had only one guitar player.
I think that's the time.
That was.
Because we shared some bills together. You know, don't you remember us meeting in New Orleans?
Yeah. Well, that was after.
That was Peter.
Peter was in the band by
okay,
then.
Okay, Peter.
Okay,
Peter. Yes.
But, you know, Divine Horseman.
I'm not Minuteman. I'm Firehose by that time.
Yeah, but.
We got to apologize to the listeners. All this memory stuff is hard, people. Very embarrassing.
Flesh Eaters, I don't think, ever played with the Minutemen, but.
No, but Divine Horseman did. Yeah.
Yeah, we played twice with you guys, at least.
One was at the Music Machine on the West Side.
Oh, well, that one I don't even remember, but we played once with you at the Lingerie.
Absolutely,
we played,
yes.
Yeah, another time with you at Fender's. It was John Cale.
Right, in Long Beach.
That's right. And Minuteman. That was an epic show.
Oh, yeah. You should have been there. You weren't there for the sound check. You should have been there. I got a story about that. He did not want to move his piano. He wanted to fight with us so bad.
I remember that.
Do you remember that?
He wouldn't move his piano. Yeah,
and we were totally okay with that.
He had a big grand piano. It wasn't like a stand-up piano.
Tune it and bring it in.
In fact, that's who he toured with a piano tuner. That's who he was torn with.
But by that time, we had the lineup. I'm pretty sure we had the lineup that was on Devil's River. We had Wayne James and we had two guitar players, Wayne James and Cam King. Cam King is a friend of Julie's from Texas, who was living in L.A. at the time. Cam King had been in a band called The Explosives, who had briefly been Rocky Erickson's band.
Pearl Harbor, too, so, up in the city.
Yeah. So Wayne and Cam were the couple guitar players during that period, during 86. And then Wayne left at the end of 86. And Cam also, we always knew Cam was kind of, in for a short duration. He wasn't really a permanent member of the band. He was in the band for maybe 7 or 8 months.
Didn't Wayne bring Peter in?
Wayne brought Peter Anderson, who played on all the stuff from 1987, the Snake Handler album, and then the handful of Sand EP. And then, you know, after the band broke up in late 80, you know, we literally broke up it was December of 87, and there was still an EP to come out, 12-inch, that came out in March of 88. But the band was gone by then. and Julie and I were split up. And then we didn't do Dwayne Horseman again until we were going to do it in 2018 with Robin, but Robin passed away in the summer of 2018. And I was in the midst of doing a reunion of the Flesh Eaters stuff, too, with the John Doe, Dave Alvin, DJ, Bill Bateman, Steve Berlin lineup. And Robin was living out near Chris Wall out in the valley in his RV, and he had gone to the aid of a woman on the street who was being savagely beaten by another homeless guy, was totally psychotic, and the guy whirled around with a tire iron and hit Robin in the face, and Robin went into a coma, and then he never came out. So
really terrible.
So that was
beautiful chat. Robin was always very nice to me. Always very nice to me. That, I remember learning about that, and it broke my heart. Look, Chris, we're at the end of the second hour.
Okay.
November 21, 2023. Edition What? Peter's a special guest. Chris D., Julie Christensen. Hold tight for hour three. November 21, 2023. It's the third hour of the What for Pedro show.
How you will complete me. Looking lazy in the sea. There's a Burmese girl out sitting, and I know she thinks of me. For the wind is in the palm trees, and the temple bells they say, come you back, you British soldier, come you back to Mandalay. Her petticoat was yellow, and her little cap was green. Her name was Super Eula, just the same as Thebo's queen. And at first I saw her smoking on a great big white cheroot, and wasting Christian kisses on a heathen idol's foot. Well, that idol made of mud, what they called the great god Bud, but a lot she cared for idols when I kissed her where she stood. Come you back to Mandalay, where the old flotilla lay. Can you hear the paddles chunking from Rangoon to Mandalay? On the road to Mandalay, where the flying fishes play. And the dawn comes up like thunder out of China across the bay. When the mist was on the rice fields and the sun was dropping low, she'd get a little banjo and she'd sing Kololo, with her arm upon my shoulder and her cheek against my cheek. We used to watch the steamers and the Hathis piling teak. Oh, elephants out piling teak in that sludgy, squadgy creek, where the silence hung that heavy you were half afraid to speak. Come you back to Mandalay, where the old flotilla lay. Can you hear the paddles chunking from Rangoon to Mandalay? On the road to Mandalay, where the flying fishes play. And the dawn comes up like thunder out of China across the bay. But that's all shoved behind me long ago and far away. There are no buses running from the bank to Mandalay. And I'm learning here in London what the 10-year soldier tells. You heard the East out calling, and you won't hear nothing else. No, you won't hear nothing else. Those spicy garlic smells, and the sunshine, the palm trees, and the tinkling temple bells. Come you back to Mandalay, where the old flotilla lay. Can you hear the paddles chunking from Rangoon to Mandalay? On the road to Mandalay, where the flying fishes play. And the dawn comes up like thunder out of China across the bay. I'm sick of wasting leather on these greasy paving stones. And the blasted English drizzle wakes the fever in my bones. Though I walk with 50 housemaids out of Chelsea to the Strand. They talk a lot of love, but what do they understand? Beefy face and grubby hand, oh what do they understand? I'm a neater, sweeter maiden in a cleaner, greener land. Come you back to Mandalay, where the old flotilla lay. Can you hear the paddles chunking from Rangoon to Mandalay? On the road to Mandalay, where the flying fishes play. And the dawn comes up like thunder out of China across the road to Mandalay, where the old flotilla lay. With us sick beneath the awnings when we went to Mandalay. Oh, the road to Mandalay, where the flying fishes play. And the dawn comes up like thunder out of China across the somewhere east of Suez, where the best is like the worst. Where there are no Ten Commandments and a man can raise a thirst. For the temple bells are calling, and it's there that I would be. By the old Mumain pagoda, looking lazy at the sea.
Watch for Pedro show. Start third hour. Divine Horseman, Next Man I See. Anti-industry after that. Divine Soul. No, Soil. Almost the same thing. J.D. Pincus, Tall, Tall Trees with Fungal Mountain Breakdown. Benedict Edwards, Mandalay. And finally, Divine Horseman again with It's Still Nowhere. So tell me about this new album we're playing these songs from.
Okay, so we had recorded the album before this one, Hot Riser and Ice Cream Phoenix, which was the reunion album. That we recorded late 2019. It was with Peter Andrist and our new bass player Bobby Permanent, who's one of Peter's longtime friend. They have a rehearsal studio they rent together, and they're symbiotic in terms of guitar and bass. They were a perfect fit. And then we brought in DJ from X to do the drums just on the records. And we tried to get that Hot Rising Ice Cream Phoenix album out, but it was right at the beginning of the pandemic, and we had trouble getting a label. And finally, towards the end of 2020, we met Larry Hardy. I wasn't familiar with the Under Red Records. And Larry Hardy was a huge fan of the Flesh Eaters and Divine Horseman. And he wanted to do the album unheard. He just said, oh, yeah, definitely. And then I sent it to him, and he loved it. And then that was a double album of vinyl and CD. And then we made plans to do this next one. And fortunately, the next one we recorded in January 2022. That's almost two years now. But that one took a long time. First of all, I had a lot of time doing writing during the pandemic. I wrote scads and scads of stream of consciousness stuff that I cut up in lyrics and put the songs together with Peter. The songs that I came up with the music, and then I showed it to Peter, and he transmuted it, transmogrified it into his language on the guitar. And then Julie brought in a couple of songs that she had written with other people, No Mercy and These Evils. And then she and I wrote a couple of songs together long distance, like remote. She was in New Mexico, and I would send her the lyrics, and she did the music to the song Bitter End and Notorious. And then I brought in three covers I wanted to do. Anita Lane, who had been associated with the Birthday Party and the early Bad Seeds with Nick Cave, had a couple solo albums out, and she had just passed away in April of 2021. And I loved her stuff, and I really wanted to cover a song by her. And we decided to do The Next Man That I See. I'm a big fan of this English band, kind of folk rock band called Smoke Fairies. They're a female duo, and they're probably in their mid-30s by now. But they came out with an album at the beginning of 2020, which they kind of got sidelined by the pandemic as well. That album was their most rock album, and they didn't really get to exploit it as much because they didn't get to go on tour. But they had a great song in there called Coffee Shop Blues, which I loved. And we covered that. And I'm a huge fan of Ed Cooper, who is, in the Saints, the original Australian Saints. And he had other bands, Laughing Clowns, and he had also had a band called The Aints, which did more noisy guitar kind of music, more akin to the Saints. Laughing Clowns was kind of more jazz rock to my knowledge, and kind of more eccentric. But I had heard It's Still Nowhere from an album he did called Ascension with the Aints, and it was just this epic, epic guitar song. And I thought, damn it, I want to cover this. And when I played it for Peter, he loved it. He was a fan of them as well. And then our bass player ended up playing second lead guitar on that song, It's Still Nowhere. And we thought, I thought it would be a great song to close out the album. It's kind of a big climactic explosion of guitars and very simple vocals. Julie and I don't even sing any harmonies or anything. We just sing in unison on those words. There's not that many words in the song. So,
well, let me play it. I want to play Bitter End.
Curdled soul,
lot for Pedro's show, last music for this edition. Chunk start off Divine Horseman, Bitter End, Cheer Accident after that with Saloon. Excerpt from Invisible Show. This is live in Bergamo, Italy, August 19, 2023, Victoria Shen. Incredible musician. And finally, Flesh Eaters, because this was always my favorite Flesh Eater tune, Pony Dress. Just love that song. I mean, I love this, the second album, all those tunes. But on the first record, also Dominoes. That song, Dominoes. Yeah, that's a great fucking tune. Who's on that one?
Dominoes. I think Joe Ramirez is on guitar.
Joe Ramirez.
I think that was one of the ones that.
Can I ask you about him? Somebody told me he's living in Idaho these days.
Who? DJ?
No. Joe Ramirez.
Oh, Joe Ramirez. I don't know. I'm out of touch with Joe.
Yeah, somebody told me he was living in Idaho, which trips me up. Yeah, I play up there all the time, but people say, hey, why are you always playing Boise? I say, look at a map. if you call them a tour more than a month, I just did my 68th tour. 58 gigs in 61 days, 15,622 miles. I drove them all. So only 68 tours more to go. But what is next for Divine Horseman? Is Divine Horseman going to tour all these songs?
Well, we'll see at the beginning of the new year. I mean, I'm not really sure we have the resources to go on a tour like band touring throughout the country, just based on the like Peter's got regular work that he does. He's a art director on movies and commercials, and he gets spotty work. Sometimes he doesn't work for months, and then he'll work for 2 months straight, like 14-hour days. And Bobby's kind of in the same boat to some extent. Our new drummer, who was actually our drummer live, is somebody who played in the Flesh Eaters in 1998 through 2000. We did one album where he was a drummer, Ashes of Time, which came out only on CD. And eventually Atavistic out of Chicago picked that CD up in the mid-2000s and distributed it. And but he's a great drummer. He's somebody who can really kind of go toe-to-toe with DJ. And he had been playing with... in the intervening years, has been playing with a guy named Merle Jagger, who's kind of a roots rock or outlaw country type guy from California.
So you're saying there's no Divine Horseman gigs. What about local gigs?
Well, we have the gigs. We're playing tomorrow night, which this may air after that.
No, it's going to air in a couple hours.
Oh, we're playing with Los Lobos tomorrow night at the Whiskey.
Well, Fredo on drums nowadays. He's incredible.
Fredo Ortiz. And that's sold out already, unfortunately, for all you people who want to come, unless you've got tickets already. If you've got tickets already, they should come early to see Divine Horseman. And then we're doing two shows supporting acts at the Roxy in Hollywood, December 19th and the 20th.
The 20th. I turned 66 on the 20th. Well, let me ask you this. Where can people find Divine Horseman information on the internet?
Well, if you go to...
in the Red Records. You're talking about the label. If you go to the label website, in the Red Records. Okay.
Yeah, if you go to the label website, there's a, you know, an artist directory, and... even on a laptop, all the people's names are very tiny.
Okay.
But, hey, we finally got Divine Horseman for all our handles on the social media, and we've got DivineHorseman.com, and I try to keep it up.
Okay. Yeah, that's on the corporate websites. I'm talking about your own personal. There's no personal Divine Horseman website, is there?
Yeah, we have those.
Oh.
There's a Divine Horseman website, but we never really do anything.
Is it called DivineHorseman.com?
Yes, DivineHorseman.com.
Okay,
and,
people.
All our handles on the social you know, media fuckers.
Yeah, I don't like using those fucking words that everybody else does. You know, subscribe, hit the bell when it rings. Fuck all that shit.
I'm way into the internet,
like the way that we're sharing information, but it seems like everybody's stooping to this retard level. We're talking like morons and providing a grist for these shills or shills for the grist, whatever.
Well, you know what? There's tons of info available if people go to, like, for instance, I've got 4 pages on Facebook. I've got my own personal page. I've got a
corporate website, you know.
Oh, well.
So if people want to go find that, they can. But, you know, from the Wikipedia.
The way
I look at that, Chris, is like a telephone pole that you staple a flyer. Like, I have nothing to do with AT&T, but I'll staple a flyer on there.
Okay. I love doing that.
Okay. So that's the way I look at it. But look, is there plans to record any more? Divine Horseman?
Well, I have plans. I don't know about the rest of the band. I mean, I've mentioned I want to do another album. I mean, it's going to be next time. I mean, this latest album that you've been playing, Bitter End of a Sweet Night, is a double vinyl album once again. And our last album was a double vinyl. So the next one we do, if there is a next one, it'll be a single vinyl. Probably only be about 10 songs,
okay,
rather than 16. But I'm hoping that by the end of 2024, maybe we'll have something. I don't know. I mentioned it to people in the band, they're not actually jumping for joy.
Well, I have to come from New Mexico back and forth. You know,
Well, look, can I put the invite out? Money. I want to put the invite out. If you do it, will you come back on the show? We can play it and talk about it.
Oh, of course.
Oh, that would be beautiful.
Thanks for having us, man.
That would be beautiful.
We love you. Yeah. We have always loved you. So
Big love right back. So, people, look forward to more Divine Horseman. I got a hankering for a feeling that it's going to come. I just know it. And good luck with these gigs with X and Los Lobos. Everybody, it's been November 21, 2023. Dish Wap Pedro. So keep your powder dry.